Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Welcome to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. This is Dr. Charles Laux, and really excited about our early morning recording here. This is the earliest podcast I've recorded before, 8:30 a.m., and it's Tuesday, January 2nd. Welcome to the new year. Happy New Year, everybody. Super excited about this year. Just so many great things going to happen with school, and it's going to get crazy right now. And I know all of you are probably in that same boat preparing your lessons and preparing and get everything ready for your new semester. I know for me, I have some things this weekend. I have Allstate auditions coming up. I have an orchestra camp I'm doing on the 20th. And then I have a pre-LGPE, or large group performance evaluation concert, on the 30th. Our large group evaluation is February 7th and 8th this year. So crazy times. And I have a GMEA conference stuck in the middle of there, too, the week before. So it's a crazy time, but it's an exciting time. And I hope everybody has had a wonderful break and refreshed and ready for the new year. It is it's awesome. And so I'm excited about 2024. This is a big year, and we're going to have a great time. So our guest today is Jessica Billings White, and she is an itinerant string teacher. We haven't had too many itinerants here on the podcast outside of the Boston, so we're going to let her talk today. And here she is. So welcome, Jessica, to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. So excited to have you.
Thank you so much. So I'm so happy to be here, Dr. Laux. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we just met like a couple weeks ago here at Midwest, and officially, and it was just great to get to know you a little bit, and you're telling me about what you do, and I was like, well, let's get you on the podcast. And then I learned more about you, and you're doing all these leadership things within Massachusetts ASTA, and so I want to let's talk about you. So you are outside of Boston in Lexington schools, is that right?
Yes, I'm in the Lexington public schools.
Okay, and what is your role there?
So my role there is that I am one of three itinerant teachers, actually, and but we have a four-person team. And I'm the only itinerant teacher that spans from the very beginning of a string player's career, mm-hmm. all the way up until where they graduate from high school.
Very cool.
So I get to see the entire trajectory of the program, which is fantastic, and the students also get to see a familiar face all the way through.
Yeah, and I think we had talked about this in the last episode, just the rewards of seeing that growth and getting those and building those relationships. And, you know, obviously your kids must love you. So just having, like you said, having that face and having that familiarity all the way through, that definitely helps with your retention numbers. It has to all the way through.
It definitely helps.
Yeah.
And what's also great is that I have three other amazing colleagues that we are constantly in conversation about, okay, so how can we stick to the curriculum? How can we make this better? Mm-hmm. What isn't working? And we also have a really, really clear view of, okay, so we need our students at this certain area before they get to high school, or, you know, that
right.
kind of thing.
So the curriculum, like you guys align the curriculum, and you're like, we're going to do this, this, and this, and we should be here when they get to this grade, and here when they, oh, that's like kind of an ideal situation.
It really is. I mean, we're incredibly lucky, and we're one of the few districts that still has in-class beginning lessons at the fourth and fifth grade level. That in order to make sure that, you know, it's open to everyone, because we do have METCO students, which are bused in from Boston every day, which is a fantastic program. But these poor kids are on the bus from, 5:30 in the morning until 6:30 at night because of traffic.
Yeah. So they get bused in from the city.
Yes.
To your district, which is, I think I looked at the map, it's north west of
yes.
the city a little bit. Okay. Great.
Yep. So that program is absolutely wonderful. And these kids come in from Boston and they have breakfast. And then they used to have lessons with us right after they got in. But we've had some finagling with our schedules during the past 2 years. But we were able to keep everything within the elementary schools. And the principals are, more or less really, really supportive of that.
Okay, great.
Fit it in. I mean, I understand the odds that they're up against where they have to have certain number of minutes for every single subject.
Yeah.
Like that. So they're up against, a wall and a hard space. And so we're incredibly lucky that we still have that.
That's a great opportunity for those kids too, to be able to come and, they may not get that string experience in their school that they're zoned for in Boston. Right. And so to be able to come out and do that, and it is a long day, but I'm sure that the rewards outweigh the negatives on, travel time. And I know when I was in ninth grade, our school was under construction. And so we got bussed out to another city, to an empty school that was not used. And they bussed us out there just for the year. And it was my ninth grade year. And it was still junior high. So, but I remember how much time I spent on the bus. And that's when I got a lot of reading done for classes and things. And I was surprised how much homework I was able to get done on the bus. And so I don't know if take advantage of that time, but I just remember that now we got bussed out to a separate city because our school was being totally rebuilt and that we had no junior high school that year. So it was kind of weird.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, so tell us about your background. Where are you from and your training and your schooling and those kind of things?
Sure. I was adopted from Incheon, South Korea when I was about 5 months old. And I grew up in upstate New York in a town called Clifton Park, which is just north of Albany, south of Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was adamant that I was a musician because she was like, she would tell everyone stories. Oh, my daughter can match pitches. Like when I was warming up her bottle, she could match the microwave. And I was like, oh, God. Tell people all these stories.
Yeah.
So she saw Yo-Yo Ma on Sesame Street or something like that, or at a concert because she was a classical music reviewer for a long time.
Okay.
And started me on the cello when I was 3, but I was in no way a prodigy. I never practiced. I was one of those kids that had ADHD and dyslexia, and getting me to sit down was incredibly difficult, and not hitting my brother with the bow was also difficult. So I found music reading especially difficult. So I did a lot of stuff by ear. So
Were you Suzuki trained?
I was Suzuki trained. And so for a very long time, probably about, and I tell all my students this, that probably until about sixth grade, I couldn't read music.
Wow. Okay.
In front of me and I'd be like, okay, 1 and 2 and maybe that's a 4 and that's a 0 or an open.
Yeah.
But what string
and
it's
the Suzuki cello books, I'm not as familiar with them. Do they have all the finger numbers in the books like the violin books do?
They do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be a real hindrance for kids for teachers wanting their student to read, and a real helper for the students who don't want to read and want to learn by finger numbers. Okay. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I, I share that story with my students because I'm like, if I can do it, you can definitely do
right.
it. I totally understand if you need to write in your fingerings, that kind of thing. But eventually we're going to wean you off of that.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was really difficult for me probably until I defected from orchestra and at about sixth grade. I still took private lessons outside of school, but then I defected from orchestra and went to band.
Oh, wow.
In the band world, and for my middle school and junior high school career, I played French horn in the bands there.
We'll make sure we delete this part of the story for that.
Okay. No,
we're going to delete that from the podcast. We did not quit orchestra.
I know, exactly. But I did rejoin orchestra in high school because I wanted to participate in all of the statewide and junior district type festivals
right.
and district type festivals. And And so I did both before they really cracked down on students about not having a lunch period and whatnot. I used to have both band and orchestra. And I had a really supportive band teacher at the time that was like, well, you know what? You're here for lunch. Why don't you try this instrument? Try this one out. And how about you try the tenor saxophone today? And how about, you know, you do oboe? And so, yeah, so it was really neat. And I, you know, I was one of those students that was probably kind of annoying because I would hang out all the time. And he was probably like, go practice this. And then, you know,
he was trying to make you leave by giving you instruments.
But it actually worked out to my advantage. Yeah. But even with the with those experiences, and my mom was like, you know, you're really good at teaching. You should go into education. Yeah. I was one of those performance majors or wanted to be a performance major. And I was like, no, I don't want to give up my dream of performing, because if I become an education major, I'll never get to perform again.
That's the misconception, isn't it?
It was awful. Yeah. I can't believe that I thought that when I was a kid, but all of my friends were like, no, you can't go into education because then you won't play anymore. And I was like, what? Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. Well, make sure to highlight this portion of the interview.
Fantastic. Yeah. You can beep everything out before then and then, you know.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. So what instrument do you perform on besides the cello then and the band?
In the band, I was doing French horn, and I also played trumpet in the jazz band as well.
Wow.
And my brother was a percussionist, so I get all my percussion knowledge from him. And my grandmother and grandfather actually were jazz musicians on the Cape that met during World War II. So that
was that's a cool story.
Yeah, so I always wanted to learn about jazz, and I was never good at it because you had to, you know, not look at the page.
Right.
And that was really hard.
No finger numbers to follow.
Exactly. It's really personal. But perfectly honest, like, I didn't understand how music really worked. I mean, when I went to McGill for my undergrad, and they were like, okay, so you're going to take Renaissance counterpoint and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, and just looked at these notes and all these numbers and, you know, just really didn't understand.
Yeah. But you figured it out. When do you think that you, I mean, obviously to get into McGill, you got to play, you have to have some knowledge, but what do you think you like figured it out? Or are you still working on that?
I'm still working on it.
Yeah,
definitely. I figured out, you know, reading and whatnot. I mean, a lot of it was done by ear. I did a lot of thing work. I bought a lot of recordings. You know, I was listening to CDs all the time. And, you know, I write in fingerings and, you know, things like that. And I really didn't understand score study or anything like that until I took a jazz materials course at McGill, which was, you know, just an extracurricular course that I could take. Probably one of my last years there. And then it all started to click and make sense and be like, oh, these are the intervals and this is why this chord is important. And this is why the third is really important of this chord and blah, blah.
Well, if you understand jazz theory, it's really probably easier to understand classical theory.
Honestly,
you know, I mean, it's so much more complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the big picture, and so that's interesting. So the jazz course is what gave you that edge.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was just a new way of looking at something that I hadn't ever experienced before.
Very cool.
In high school, we were just reading charts. So I never got to improvise based on, you know, I wasn't good enough to do that.
Okay. Let everybody else do that. So how do you feel about that part now? I mean, I have Martha Mook coming on for our next episode, and she's obviously, I don't know if you know Martha, but she's an amazing eclectic styles player, improvise, like all kinds of cool things. But how do you feel that you are with that now? Do you feel like you're
a lot better with that? And through just sight reading with friends, that was something that I didn't do until I went to the Boston Conservatory and did my master's in performance there. I met immediately some people that were like, oh, you're a cellist, let's sight read. And I was like, sight read? Oh gosh. And actually that was the best thing for me, was, you know, just sight reading and not being worried about, oh, if I mess this up or I don't know this music or things like that. And that really helped. But my understanding of music really didn't take off until my teacher, Andy Mark, you know, said, you know, I have this program where my partner works in the Needham Public School District. And what we do is we get beginning instrumentalists there and you get to teach them for a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
Which was great. Because at Boston Conservatory at that time for the music education program, it was, or even just for the performance program, they wanted to make sure that they put an emphasis on a whole musician so that you were, you were not only playing in orchestra, but you were doing opera, you were doing musical theater, you were doing quartets and chamber music and also, you know, symphonies and working with kids. So that's where, you know, my teacher was like, oh, well, you're really good at this education thing. You should take a look at it. And I was like, nope, I'm still not doing it. And I finished my performance master's there and did a licentiate degree, which is kind of like a fake degree where you can still say that you're in college and not have to pay back your loans. So that was really nice. But I was starting to get really stressed out about, you know, paying my rent and making sure that I could, you know, pay my loans after I graduated and things like that. And finally, my roommate at the time told me, you know what, hey, I'm in the education program here. I really like it, and I think this will really help you, and I've seen you teach, and I think you would be fantastic for this. And I'm still really hesitant, but that's when I was introduced to Dr. Bernard at the Boston Conservatory, who was head of the department at the time.
Okay.
She really changed my life because she showed me that you could have a career as a education major and as a teacher and also still keep performing.
Yeah.
And that was so, so important to me. And she really, you know, lit a fire under me and off I went. So that's
obviously saw that spark and that the personality and, you know, you teaching other people, and you didn't see it yourself, but they saw it in you. And so that's really cool when that happens. And we have to try to, this is what we were also talking about this in a past episode of the podcast, of inspiring our students to want to become teachers, because, you know, teaching isn't always the most glorious profession and sought after. But when we meet people who are, you know, have the personality like yourself and like other teachers who are just amazing teachers, it's like, And they don't realize it. It's like we need to do that's our job to get them into it and to spark some interest and let them know that there's something they have that not everybody has. And we need them. We need you in the profession. So that was good. Now, so now you're 14. This is your 14th year in the classroom. it goes by fast. Yes.
By real fast. Oh my goodness. And so this is my 10th year in Lexington. And you know, I mean, we're incredibly lucky here because we touch the lives of about 950 plus students a year.
Wow.
That's a lot of students, which is fantastic.
It is. That's 5 through 12 and strings?
4 through 12.
4 through 12. Perfect.
Yeah, 4 through 12. And it's just amazing. And, you know, we went through the pandemic, and I know that for some people it was really, it just crushed a lot of people.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was ready to quit. I was I don't want to do this anymore. Like I was in here and it wasn't as nice as it is now. Cause it was one of my pandemic projects, was finishing my studio, but I was like down here in my dungeon and like for so many hours, and I was so tired, and I was just, the kids, you could just tell at home were playing, but they're kind of like, they weren't. It was just, the magic was gone, you know, and it took a while to get it back. It's still coming back. But how are you feeling about the return of things after COVID? Are you feeling like it's 100% back? Are we 80% back? Are you seeing it probably? I mean, I'm seeing it with my juniors and seniors mostly, and maybe a little bit sophomores, but it's starting to go away. The effects. How are you feeling about that with your kids?
Well, with my kids, I mean, you still see the effects even in elementary school. The attention and just the, for lack of a better term, neediness of the kids. It's just still there.
Lack of independence.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's something that we're slowly teaching them again, is that, okay, so if you have a question, you have to advocate for yourself, but, you know, you can't blame you can't say, oh, I can't do this, so I'm not going to try that
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
I want you to try. And what's neat about our program is that we can tell our kids, you know what? Failure is good.
Yeah.
Because where that you can learn is through failure. So I want you to fail every single day.
That's
That thing. And just to change that mindset of, because a lot of my students are really, really scared to try, especially my older students.
Okay.
So I put a lot of time into building those relationships again and mm-hmm. something to, look forward to outside of school, like with my symphony orchestra.
Yeah,
we're trying to do one night a month, where we have a movie night or we have a game night or something like that, and it's a potluck type thing, so everyone brings food.
Yes,
and we just have a really good time. And it really opens people up and it makes the camaraderie and the relationships of the orchestra that much stronger so that they feel comfortable at school. They are comfortable trying in front of their friends, that they're not scared of making mistakes. And that's been so important.
It's definitely one of those things that if your students feel good with each other. And then I tell them, I said, we're all friends here. And I said, I know not all of us are best friends here because we have our best friends, but we all have to work together and we all have to respect each other. And the more comfortable you are around each other, the better we're going to play together, the better you're going to feel individually, the more confident you're going to be, and hopefully the more motivated you're going to be for the betterment of the group, So all those non-musical social situations are really, really important. Yeah.
Well, I've also been reading the Percy Jackson series with my children recently. And I don't know if you know anything about Percy Jackson.
No.
So Percy Jackson is he's a demigod. So he's the son of Poseidon and a mortal. And it's all about his adventures, finding about who he is and how he fits into this, this huge scheme of this universe.
Wow.
And one thing that I really appreciated about these books is that he said that dyslexia and ADHD, which every demigod had apparently, were his superpowers. And I was like, oh, that's a good way to think about it. And as soon as I started, really thinking over, like really just going into that mindset, dyslexia keeps me humble. ADHD gives me energy while I'm teaching. Anxiety makes me flexible because I'm, all over the place and I have to think about every single scenario so that I'm ready for anything. And depression makes me take time for me.
That's a really great way to think about it. And I know all the teachers that are out there listening, I mean, we all go through moments of, highs and lows and so this is a really great way to think about it. Like, well, why am I low today? Well, maybe I do need some of that time for myself, and looking at it as a superpower rather than a disability or something that's going to bring you down, but use it to bring you up and use it to rationalize, like, this is who I am. This is what it is. That's fantastic. I love that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me a long time to get there.
Well, sure.
All of my students, I lead with that. I'm like, hey guys, I just so that you know, and I have ADHD and dyslexia and depression and anxiety and blah, 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 blah. And these are, these are things that happen, and don't be scared to ask me questions about it. And a lot of kids do. They reach out and they're like, okay, so how did you know that you had this? Or what's it like, not being able to read music and pretending that you can, and, things like that. And so it makes me really relatable to a lot of kids, which when you share something that's extremely personal about yourself, they feel safe in that environment to open up and share about themselves. And that was something I learned from my mom with her interviewing, is that she would always, whenever she was interviewing somebody for a column that she was writing, she would always lead with, oh, my kids, blah, 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 and I, blah, blah, blah. And then we'd get these really interesting, intimate stories from the musicians and composers and conductors that no one ever heard because they didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah. I definitely, at the beginning of every year, I share my story of, growing up and lost my mom and things that I had to do to cope with my childhood and different things that went on. And so that really sets the tone for kids looking at you as a real person, because I think sometimes kids put up the big wall and they're like, teacher, me. You know, I ask questions. They teach me. I don't, you know, but particularly in our profession where we're with kids year after year after year, you know, for them not to understand who we are, and for us to not to try to understand who our students are, that's a big miss if you're not doing that. And, you know, obviously there's, you know, personal things that you might not want to share, but at the same time, if you're willing to do that, I think that does open up a big level of trust with kids, you know, that higher level of trust. And then that reflects in the learning that they the gains that they make too, for sure.
Yeah, that's really true. Very, very true.
Very awesome. So what are some of the things you're doing with your ASSA chapter? As I know that it said in your bio that you are past president, secretary, and webmaster. So you're doing like, are you now secretary and webmaster and past president all at the same time? Oh.
So those are all past past positions that I held before.
Wow.
Way before the pandemic, actually.
Okay.
And so I was working on the board with the ASTA chapter of Massachusetts. And unfortunately, I had to stop when I was diagnosed with depression because it was just too much for me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's times where you have to say no.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that was really hard for me because a lot of the colleagues that I had there and the friendships I had made, I felt like I was, you know, I was just
letting them down. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, there's that time in your life where you have to just put yourself first. And sometimes we put our students first, we put our careers in a high priority. And there's sometimes where you just have to like back up and say no and stop, you know. And I did that a few years back, and there was a year that I didn't do any conference presentations or anything. And I needed to do that, you know, for me and everything. So I think it was really, really good. So totally understand that. And people that are listening out there, if you're in that situation, you know, take some time for yourself. It's okay. You can bounce back, and you won't even realize nobody will realize what you missed or what, you know, the things that didn't happen. But if you don't want to have that downward trajectory for your life and have it, you know, have depression take over it and get so bad that you can't recover from it. So being able to recognize it and act quickly is important.
And it's hard. It's a really hard decision to make.
It is.
And then you realize, okay, so I was, you know, you start looking at little accomplishments and little, you know, positive things in your life as huge, you know, undertakings, which we all should do more of, you know, on a regular basis. Just be, you know, a little bit gentler with yourself and, you know, understand that you might not be able to do everything that you could do when you were younger. And that kind of audacity to just, you know, go out there, you know, guns blazing and whatnot. So
it gets harder. Definitely as you get older. The 2024 is the big 5-0 year for me. And I'll tell you, it does get more difficult. But at the same time, you know, age is what you let it be. And age is what you make of it. So I'm not going to dwell on that. I'm going to thrive on that, you know, and keep going.
I think that's why I enjoy teaching the younger students as well as having student teachers, because I'm always learning from, oh, you have this new technology, let me try this, or, you know, that kind of thing. What kind of things did you use growing up that, you know, I've never heard of, that kind of thing, where I was like, TikTok, what is that?
Right.
And, you know, all of those things. And I finally started dabbling in a little bit of Instagram reels and things like that, just to make my students laugh, where, mm-hmm. you know, something will happen. And then you go into a video editor and then you make a reel of, you know, just a characterization of, oh, these are funny things that happened in orchestra today, or you know, things like that. And they're all like, yeah, I remember when that happened. And,
yeah. That's good. Yeah. And it's hard. It's kind of hard to stay up on some of the late. I mean, I'm a technology nut, but it's still like I'm always looking for the next thing or the thing that will make my life easier or something better. and without becoming gimmicky, you know, but it's, and then also just keeping up with the kids and the music they listen to. And it's hard, you know, sometimes because we get stuck in our ways.
It is. It's really difficult. And I appreciate, like, my students. There's one in particular who was like, oh, you know what? I have this great idea for a music app where you can help your students, you know, learn how to read music or, you know, record or things like that. And, you know, is it okay if we do a, you know, I forget what they call that, where it's a just a project outside of school where, you know, I can talk to you every once in a while and we can try to develop this app.
Like an independent study type thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Okay, perfect.
And that's really difficult because I'm like, well, what if we wanted to do this? And what if we wanted to do that? And how would you incorporate this? And it's a lot of programming that I know.
Right.
I can just blurt out all these ideas. And he's like, oh, well, maybe I can do that. Maybe I can't. Let me think about how to do this. And so it's a real eye-opening experience for me in that way. But just having fun conversing with somebody else who's gone through the string program and is like, oh, okay, so I'd like to see, you know, if we, maybe we can incorporate this idea or that idea, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
that is really cool. It's neat to see what kids can come up with and the ideas that they have and things that we might have never thought of just because of their generation and what they have experienced growing up. It's different than what you and I had. So
I never had, I can't believe how fast technology is changing. I mean, we didn't even Google.
Right. Know? Yeah. I always joke with my students. I'm like, I said, you would never believe the cell phone I had when I was in high school. And they're like, was it that big one? I'm like, no, I didn't even have that. We didn't have anything. Like, how did you survive, Dr. Lux?
I know. I really wanted a pager. So when I was in Canada, that's when the cell phone thing was booming. But I really wanted a pager because I didn't want to go home and listen to my, you know, my answering machine and, you know, that kind of things. And
so like, funny. So I funny. Know. Yeah. So funny how and then the whole thing with AI now, it's interesting yet scary at the same time, you know, with all the things that it's able to generate, not just content or text, but even now like photos and videos that aren't real, but they look real. So that's the scary part. Someone's going to take over the Orchestra Teacher podcast.
I know. Right? Well, if you ever have your kids write an essay of some kind, I learned this from, I mean, I've never used it, but, and I usually don't have my kids write essays because then I have to correct them.
Fun.
Yeah. Right? That's what I want to spend my time doing. But I learned from, I think it was a New York Times article talking about AI, and they said that if you hide a word in the document, the assignment, like say it's a Google Doc, but you make the writing match the background, you put a word in there like a lemon or, you know, something. And if their essay comes up with that word or something about a lemon, then you know that they've used an AI
to like copy it. They paste. Okay, yeah, interesting.
Like, that's really ingenious, but also devious. And I don't know
right.
how I feel.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the future of how it impacts our profession and the academia as a whole, just with plagiarism and. It's going to get harder to detect, you know, because the writing will get better. It won't be so scripted. And because you can look at an AI written like article or whatever and like, okay, yeah, that looks like it's very formatted in the AI way. But now it's going to change. So pretty interesting.
I guess that's why it's a good thing we do what we do, because we can have in-class assessments or we can have their STEM partners or the person that's just standing next to them assess them.
Yeah.
It was something that I learned from Angela Harmon, actually, because she does a lot of in-class assessing so that, you know, she doesn't have to sit there and listen to recordings. And
I do a little bit of each, but it is hard to listen to a lot of recordings on the outside. I mean, you have a lot of students and, you know, each one's a minute long and you have 150 kids. Well, that's 3 hours minimum, you know, so it's difficult to do for sure.
Now, do you use something like Flipgrid
I use Flipgrid. It's one of our, it's a Microsoft product. Our county approves it. I see that you guys are Google. Are you guys a Google district?
Yes, we are
Google. Yeah, I'm so jealous.
But we do have Flipgrid. I'm scared of the Microsoft.
Yeah.
What people have said about the just the way it's configured and whatnot.
That's Flipgrid has been good, but it's I'm a Google fan big time, and I used to use Google Classroom before COVID, and then after COVID, they said, no, you must do this, and this. You can't use this, you know. So it's what it is. You got to use the tools that the school district approves.
Well, have you heard of Bokaroo? Have you ever used Bokaroo?
No.
So Bokaroo is a free program, and it was okay by our school district because it doesn't collect any data, but a lot of the foreign language teachers use it for just analyzing people talking. And so it's just a site where you can record something and then it generates a link and you just post that link into Google Classroom or something like that. You can download it, whatever you'd like to do. And
so it does audio recordings.
It does audio recordings.
It creates a link and it's non-traceable for the corporations and all that. Okay. And it's kids safe.
Yes, it is it's kid safe and teacher approved.
And it's one more time, Bokaroo?
Bokaroo, Vocaroo.com.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to check it out. That sounds really neat.
That's a great website to use.
Yeah.
Especially if students don't feel comfortable videoing themselves.
Right, right.
That kind of thing. I always tell them that they could wear a mask or they could put a Halloween hat on or, you know, a costume or something like that. But a lot of them just feel more comfortable doing this.
So yeah. Some of my students will put the smiley face that you can put over them or, you know, a sticker over their face while they're playing. I'm okay with that too.
Yeah. And that's something you can do in Flipgrid. I really like that.
Right. That's on Flipgrid. Yeah.
Do you let your students listen to each other?
Yes. Unless it's for like a placement audition or seating auditions, because then I don't want, you know, them to go, well, I think I played better than someone's. But we do some practice vlogs, which is a practice sample. So you have to, you know, on the camera state a goal, an attainable goal within your music or exercise, and let me know what that is. And then in the next 4 minutes, you have to practice that. I want to see you practicing. I don't want to see you performing it. I want to see you working towards that goal, practice goal. So, and I leave those open because I think it's important for kids to understand the process of practicing and some of the strategies that kids use. And you know, most of my stronger students will have the most views because everybody's going to there to look and say, well, what are they doing? How are they doing it? And I think that is helpful. And I have a few students who are a little bit squeamish about it. But for the most part, people are okay with it. And again, building those relationships and that family atmosphere and the comfort level helps kids not be worried about that too much.
That's such a great idea. I might have to.
Yeah, the practice log. I think it's there's a post on my website about it somewhere. But I really enjoyed it, or it's maybe in the session I do on practice strategies, and it might be in there too. So, I know it's in there for sure. But anyways, and then so what are just some of the things that you're noticing in string ed or across the profession, or things that are maybe you're concerned about or things that you're excited about? Do you have anything that you can think of?
Oh, let's see. Definitely some things that I'm noticing is that you have to slow down a lot. So we used to go, in the elementary school level, we only have a half an hour with them once a week.
Ooh, yeah, that's hard. By the time you tune, you get 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember those days.
Super quick. We're only using the A&D string today. That's all we're tuning.
That's right.
It's awful, but, it works. And we've found that, that our curriculum for, we have a January concert. Sometimes we have to take some things out or sometimes we need to rewrite something or, it's okay if you write all your fingerings and your note names in because that's...
Because we're in a time crunch.
Exactly. That's okay. And they have to, they have to feel successful with these concerts, concerts or, or they quit, unfortunately.
Right.
This is too hard. I can't do this. But I found that, I think it was your session at Midwest that that also touched on this, where you had them, you recorded their first note or their first day in strings. And I've been doing that with my classes on Class Dojo, because that's a free app.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Send that to all of my parents and just say, hey, this is, they were able to play Hot Cross Buns today, you know, pizzicato, and now we're doing it with our bow. Check this out. And then they play it and I upload it to all those families and they can all see it and download it if they want it.
Nice.
And just showing that to my kids again, my students, and being like, hey, do you remember in September where you couldn't hold your bow? Look at you now.
Yeah.
That's huge for, you know, for student engagement and also just, you know, keeping that fire underneath them.
It's like a digital portfolio. Yeah. Like that digital portfolio of, you know, the progression, and kids don't realize that they've made progress, you know? And so I think it's important for, like you're doing, you're showing them. And my fall concert, we did, it was really early this year. And so we did two pieces and we did a skills demonstration, and, you know, we did a scale and arpeggio, each group did, and, you know, they got progressively more difficult, more octaves and things. And so for me, it was a way to show my parents, like, well, here's what your kid's doing now. Here's what they could be doing, you know, 2 years from now, if they're in the top orchestra or whatever, you know, with the three octave scales and arpeggio. So for me, it was one of those things to show the parents that progression too. And this Class Dojo sound like it would work well. Are you able to send a video then?
Yes. Yeah. So it looks like a Facebook stream almost.
Oh, cool.
But it's a closed circuit. So that means that only the parents that you you've sent the link to can see what's happening, and can see all of the updates, and you can send out, hey, don't forget that we have strings tomorrow.
Yeah.
Your instrument, and it goes right to their phone. So they're able to see that.
Really. Very nice.
So some parents use that. I still have parents that, you know, and families that prefer email, which is fine. So I just do both.
Yeah.
But I really like that was an experiment this year. So
good.
Pretty well so far.
Fantastic. So, yeah, it's hard. The one day a week, you know, and the kids forget their instrument or something happens or there's, you know, class is canceled for this reason. You know, it's,
They're
the challenges of elementary strings. Yeah.
Yep. But I've also found that a lot of singing is really, really helpful. So if they can sing it, they can play it, especially if they can sing the notes and they don't realize that they're singing. But also sing the fingerings or sing the note names, that, you know, all of that just, you know, keeps reinforcing all the things that they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
Huge and really,
yeah,
really helpful.
Pitch, intonation, pulse. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Really, really important. Well, this is great. I'm so glad that we got to chat today. And I know you have a long day of teaching ahead, right? Is this your first day back?
My first day back.
Well, good luck. I know you're going to have a great semester. And I will put your email on the podcast description. So if anybody has questions for you, and are you available to come and work with other groups like in your area or do like honor groups? Have you done that before?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So definitely reach out, everybody out there, reach out to Jessica if you're interested. But it's been so fun to get to know you a little bit more. And I'm glad that you were willing to come on the podcast and be a guest today. Just awesome. It was just awesome.
Well, thank you so much. You are a huge influence, and I really, really appreciate your time and your generosity with the whole string community.
I love it. And, you know, like I said, I say this almost every episode, but every time I do this, I get something great to take away personally, selfishly, for myself, too. But I hope everybody out there is excited about the new year, about your new semester, and make those resolutions and try to keep them for as long as you can. I know it's challenging. For me, it's trying to eat a little healthier and reduce sugar intake and those cravings of sweets and things that I like. But anyways, thank you so much, Jessica, for being here. It's just a great guest, and I thought we had a really awesome conversation.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. So everybody else, we will see you very soon. I'm doing a live stream with Martha Mook today at 10 o'clock a.m. So we'll see you guys there. Again, thanks for being here on the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in. For resources and more information, visit orchestrateacher.net.